Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is Republican Assembly Minority Leader Brian Kolb. Assemblyman Kolb represents the 131st Assembly District, which includes Geneva, Canandaigua, and Seneca Falls. Welcome, Leader Kolb.
Always a pleasure, Alan. Good to be on your show.
So, the big news of the week is the Malcolm Smith scandal. We have a major state senator. The newspapers are filled with this. This does not redound well to the legislature, to anybody in the legislature, and it has to do with Republicans, of all things. The idea that the Democrat, Senator Smith, wanted to cross over and run for mayor as a Republican in New York City and had to get something called a Wilson Pakula, which is one of my favorite words in all political science literature, from three Republican leaders. And the accusation basically is they were being bribed to allow him to run as a Republican, even though he's a Democrat. What do you make of all this?
Well, it's a sad... Really, another sad chapter in a book that just doesn't seem to want to be closed in terms of alleged corruption and scandals that affect elected officials, whether it's in Albany, New York City, or anywhere. It's one of those stories that continues to reinforce a bad perception that people have about those that serve in our local, state, or federal government. And, you know, that's, again, why it's so sad. And you know, certainly have to let the system work its magic in terms of the judiciary process and see exactly what comes out in the end in terms of convictions or not convictions, depending on what the courts decide. But it's really not, it's just very sad to even have it on the newspaper headlines.
I want to spend a little time with you on this Wilson Pakula thing. The concept here is that, as I said before, if you want to run, if you're in one party, you want to run in the other party, you have to ask the other party to allow you to do that. Is that a good idea?
Well, you know, good idea, bad idea. I think if you talk to most elected officials, they would just as soon not have third parties. And this is where most of the Wilson Pakulas are joined in, whether it's getting a working families endorsement or the Conservative Party endorsement, Independence Party endorsement. Obviously, as a registered Republican, you can only run as a registered Republican, or a registered Democrat, run as a registered Democrat. So it's been used really mostly to garner third party support traditionally, rather than a major party line. And what's interesting about the whole Malcolm Smith entree here is that I think most political observers felt that he was not going to get the endorsement, regardless whether he had local chair's endorsement or not, or getting the Wilson Pakula to be able to run as a Republican. So, especially in New York City, which is dominated by Democrats by, 4 or 5 to 1. So, but traditionally, Alan, it has been used for securing a third-party endorsement, such as the Independence Party, Conservative Party, or the Working Families Party.
Could you just take a little bit more time on that, Leader Kolb, because you've left me in the dust, and I therefore think that some of the others also who are listening right now. Now, what is the Wilson Pakula, which allows you to cross over, have to do with third parties?
Well, basically what it is it's a name that's stuck on a form that basically allows, let's just use the Working Families Party as an example,
sure,
that if you want the Working Families endorsement or to run on the Working Families line in an election, let's say for the state assembly, and you have, let's say, the Democrat endorsement, so you got the Democrat line, but you want to have another line to garner more votes.
Sure.
So if there's no, shall we say, announced candidate for the Working Families line, you seek this endorsement by the Independence Party, or I'm sorry, the Working Families Party, and they have to do that through this document, which is referred to as a Wilson Pakula. And really, it's really just a form that authorizes you to run on that line, and you have to have it to be able to run on that line. Now, if there's another candidate, they could also ask for a Wilson Pakula from the same party to run on that line as well. But it's always about just trying to get the authorization to be a candidate on their line on the ballot which is another opportunity to garner in an assembly district race. It could be another couple thousand votes.
So why should that be? Why should that be the case? You know, more progressive states than New York, where the politicians haven't made people jump through hoops. You get to run. You want to run, you run. And if the people want to elect you in a primary, they elect you in a primary. And if they don't, they don't.
Well, I think that's why their argument is about should there be, you know, third-party lines. And in New York State, if you garner X amount of votes during the gubernatorial run, you get to keep your line as an option of running a candidate in New York State elections. And I think the third parties look at this as an opportunity to be relevant and to have an impact on elections, both at the local and state level. You know, I think the Conservative Party would say if it wasn't for them, they, you know, George Pataki would have never become governor. And this is the impact role that they play. Independence Party, Working Families Parties all believe that they can make the difference in a close race. And that's why, if you will, I think the powers that be have never looked at really changing the election law because they believe that they can manipulate these endorsements to help them in local races.
Well, I don't like it. But let me move on and ask you about Councilman Halloran, the only elected Republican on the city council in New York, I think in New York City, the only elected Republican. And he goes and gets implicated in something like that. Do you have any advice for him? Do you think that the party ought to do anything about him?
Well, I think first and foremost, it's like everything else. I think that, you know, you're not guilty until proven so. And
absolutely,
I think this is the problem what we have in the media firestorm is as soon as you're arrested for something, you're automatically judged guilty. And, you know, I think, you know, I have said this and different things have happened to other legislators is, you know, let due process take its course and see what happens. And then you take action after that in terms of resigning the position, because quite frankly, there have been cases that have fallen apart once you got through the judicial side of the business. And I can tell you in a local area back up in the Rochester area, there was a executive within the county organization that got arrested and tried by a district attorney, and the judge threw out all the charges. And all I'm saying is, but the guy's name was raked through the mud through this whole thing, and it was very difficult for him and his family to get a job again due to what was put in the press just on the fact that he was arrested and the DA brought charges, which were never sustained in the court system. Now, I'm not saying that in this particular case with Halloran or the GOP chairs or the Rockland County officials won't be tried and convicted in court, but I think it's like everything else in our site. It was built on you're innocent until proven guilty, and I think they should be given their due process in court, and then judgments and what they should be taken away or not taken away should be done after that fact.
Well, Branko, I certainly think that it is a proper warning that you are laying out. Nevertheless, that leads me to ask you why both the Republicans and the Democrats who are looking at this firestorm have relieved, these guys of their committee assignments and positions. Is that right, considering what you just said?
Well, you know, I can't speak for their decision-making. You know, it's up to them to decide, but you know, in our particular conference, you know, Steve Katz was ticketed for possession of marijuana, and I was asked what I was going to do about it, and I said, well, he has to go to court, and we'll see what the court says. You know, how is that violation treated in the eyes of the law? And certainly the same situation happened with Vito Lopez and the outcry over that, and I said, you know, you've got to let due process take its course before you come out and recommend that someone should be punished or penalized for, you know, being arrested or at least being looked at by being arrested. So that's a very dangerous slope, I think, that you convict without getting due process and court proceedings. I think it's a bad message to send. And again, I'm not saying that they shouldn't be taken out of office if convicted. Absolutely, they would lose their office. But certainly to prejudge before the court papers were even filed, I just wouldn't do it because I think it's too premature.
So I'm sorry for beating the dead horse, but it sounds like you're being critical of the leaders who did do that.
Well, I won't say I'm critical, but that's just not how I would do it. And I've been very clear because, you know, I got hounded, quite frankly, by some of the Albany press that I didn't come out screaming and hollering and looking for people's heads with the Vito Lopez scandal and the outcries against Speaker Silver. And I got criticized by members of my own party because I wasn't out, you know, banging the drum for heads to roll. But I got to tell you, it's just not my style. And I believe wholeheartedly, and you're innocent until proven guilty. and we should not be prejudging people. And but that's just me. I mean, I can't tell people what to do or not to do. I just feel very strongly in that belief, and that's why I've treated my own members of the conference with Steve Katz the same way.
There's been much made in the last several days by the U.S. attorney and others saying that there is a culture of corruption in Albany. Is that so?
Well, I disagree with that broad brush, to be perfectly honest with you. There's a lot of people that have served honorably in the state legislature, but there are people that have not. And those people that we find out have not served honorably are usually prosecuted by the law. And if the allegations rise to the level of a conviction, they're removed from office. And whether they're fined or imprisoned, they get their just desserts, if you will, after the process has taken due course. Have we had bad apples? Absolutely. Do I think it's perverse through the entire legislature? No. I think that certainly, you get this in any profession, whether it's teachers or blue-collar work, it doesn't matter what profession, there are bad apples. And no matter what kind of laws that you have, and you can have the toughest ethics law in the nation, and there are people that are still think if there's a way to maybe if they're padding their checkbook, if this is what they're trying to accomplish, if you're, shall we say, dishonest, you're still going to find other ways regardless what the law says. And I think that we get a lot of publicity seeing that we're public officials on this type of bad behavior, and the press loves to promote it. You know, how does the press find out 4 hours before these people were arrested so that they're there to be able to take pictures and camp outside the person's home? Again, I'm not saying that if they're guilty, they should be punished to the fullest extent of the law, but I think that there's this media culture that gotcha journalism that has lost sight of fairness and really just, again, hate to be redundant here, but you're innocent until proven guilty.
So you're the leader. You're a powerful man. You're in the assembly. There comes that moment when, and I think that this is something all of us are interested in, when somebody comes to you in your office and says something that's inappropriate. You know, Christine Lavin, the great folk singer, wrote a song called What Could They Have Been Thinking? There has to be something in which you turn around and say, uh-oh, I don't like the way this is going. I'm sure it's happened to you.
Actually, it hasn't.
Really?
There can only be one moment that I can recall, and it was dealing with local politics several years ago where someone, you know, came to me and said, you know, I think you should do this to this person. And I said, well, we're not going to have that discussion. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't about illegal activities. It was the nature of the conversation and dealing with politics while I was in my state office, and this dealt with local politics, and I was not going to get involved in that. And that's pretty much been the worst of it, but that's at least my experience. Now, it might be different for others, but I've really never had to worry, at least so far in my 13 years, that someone walked into my office and proposed an idea that was corrupt or potentially corrupt, that was inappropriate, because if it did happen, I think I would have done the right thing, which is to do whatever I needed to do to correct that situation.
Now, Brian Cole, there is, of course, a temptation from a lobbyist or others who want to get something done, and we have money plays a big role in all of this, campaign financing. You know, somebody who puts money into the coffers of a political party thinking they're going to get something out of it. Look, we saw, frankly, Michael Bloomberg, who I'm very respectful of, spending a fortune to make sure he could run a third time and again on different things. But he did it legally. It was his own money, did it legally. I wonder, should we look at the way in which these laws are drawn?
Well, in terms of campaign finances, absolutely. The only thing I've ever said about campaign finance reform is that we should not be using the taxpayers' money for publicly financed campaigns, because the people in my district, for sure, don't want their tax dollars being used for political purposes in terms of funding campaigns. But at the same token, those same people are saying we have to have campaign finance reform because of the perception that money controls politics. And the thing that I've said all along is that we need to have full disclosure, and that there could be creative ways to level the playing field in terms of money. Obviously, you know, I've had the experience being in the assembly, that we've been outspent and outraised by the assembly Democrats 4-5-1 every election cycle.
Sure, people want their money's worth.
Well, that's correct. They're looking at the guys that are in power.
Right.
And I made a suggestion to good government groups that were in my office talking about campaign finance reform. And I said, well, why don't we do this? If for every dollar that someone gives the assembly Democrats, they should give an equal dollar to the assembly Republicans, and the same thing with the Senate Republicans and the same thing with Senate Democrats. And then you'll find out very quickly that things will receive a whole lot of parity very quickly, that you're not gaining financial advantage in your fundraising because you just happen to have more votes than the other side in the legislature. But they're saying, well, we don't know if we can go there because we're not sure the majorities will sign on to it. Well, of course, that's part of the problem, just like you had with redistricting. You know, we didn't have real true independent redistricting in this last cycle because the two majorities didn't want it.
Well, you're right about that. I'm fascinated by the whole thing. As a student of the legislature for 40 years, I'm fascinated because in the old days, there's no question, if the Republican majority in the Senate was in control and firmly in control, they weren't going to want any part of some of these reforms that you're talking about. But now, they're not so firmly in control. Have you noticed a difference in their discourse?
Of course there is. I think if you just look at some of the provisions that have been passed legislatively in the last couple of years, I think 10 years ago never would have happened. For instance, the same-sex marriage vote that got put into law, I think the burying the minimum wage in the budget bill this year is another example. I think the New York Safe Act is an example that would never have taken place 10 years ago. These are significant pieces of legislation that I think that would never have happened, like I said, even 5 years ago in terms of if the Senate Republicans were truly in power.
Those are all great examples, Brian, and I thank you for them. And you're right. But I'm thinking specifically of some of the procedural things, things like campaign finance reform. If you think you're going to be in the majority forever, then why would you want any part of it? The old system works for you. But if you think that you could be out on your behinds next year and be in the minority the same way you guys are in the assembly, maybe you would have a different view on some of these laws.
That's very true, as well as the internal rules on how things are governed in each of your houses. Certainly, people have said to me, well, you know, assembly Republicans can, if you're for campaign finance reform, you might be able to raise more money for your individual candidates under a public finance system versus the current system. And I said, well, that's probably true, but if you're going to use taxpayer dollars, that's where I'm going to hold the line and say no, because I don't believe we should use taxpayer dollars for political campaigns. There's got to be another way. So, I mean, you can always be tempted by the devil, but at some point in time, you got to stand on principle on some of these issues. And that's why I've said I think there's other ways to get an end result that people are looking for without necessarily giving away your principles.
Brian Kolb, I have to tell you, I love having you on the program because you're never afraid to talk about this stuff. And even though we may not agree on some of it, you're very forthcoming and I appreciate it. Let's talk a little bit about the budget. You just mentioned it. Some things were buried in there that you might have had some questions about. You know, we used to talk about three men in the room. Now, you know, the two majority leaders, whatever, the Speaker and the Majority Leader in the Senate, and the Speaker in the House, and the Governor. But I am of a new opinion. I think now it's one man in a room. I think the Governor has his way. Am I wrong about that?
Well, since I'm not intimately involved with those conversations, it's hard to say. But when you talk, you know, off the record with some of the people that are in those rooms, they'll, you know, say that Governor Cuomo is driving the bus for sure. And they're trying to help steer it a little bit. But, you know, I think that there's not a lot of public disagreements on policy issues, which I think is significant. I think, you know, regardless of what anybody says, I think I'm probably the most outspoken person on public policy disagreements with the legislature and also dealing with policies that the governor stands behind. And I said to the governor, by the way, whenever I disagree with you, it's not in politics. It's not because you're a Democratic governor. It's because I really vehemently have a different opinion on the public policy side. And I just don't see enough discourse in terms of having better open conversations about public policy than I'm seeing right now. And I don't know if I really would say that's a result of just it's Governor Cuomo or just a result of people just saying, hey, they don't want to fight with him. You know, you just don't have an answer to that.
How can it be? The Senate maintains, you know, a fair amount of people in blue state New York, and the Assembly Republicans can't. Is it all a matter of the way the districts are drawn?
There's a lot to it, and redistricting is a big part of that. back in 2010, which seems like forever ago, we went from a low of 39 seats to 51 seats. And then with some people that left office to do other things in our conference, you have special elections, which are always very difficult to win, especially when you're outspent. Then you got redistricting that always will take anywhere from 3 to 6 seats away from the minority, especially in a presidential year, which happened to us. So you get knocked down a couple pegs and you got to dust yourself off and start all over. But if we had a true independent redistricting voting plan every 10 years, we would have at least a half dozen seats right now, more than we do today. And then when you add in the spending and the advantages that we have, that we're constantly under the gun trying to raise money, and it's very, very difficult, but yet we do have our successes, not as many as we'd like. But like I said, 2 years ago, we were really heading in the right direction. We got kicked back a couple steps, and like I said, now we got to start all over again. But the other thing is, you know, we lose very good people. Just recently, Tony Jordan, who's our floor leader, announced he's going to run for Washington County District Attorney. That's great talent, and when talent leaves, it's very tough to replace. It doesn't mean you can't do it, but, you know, you'd like your shining stars to stay for a while. But we've really lost some good people over the years, and some of them have gone on to the state Senate. Some gone, like Mark Molinaro, Dutchess County Executive, Jack Quinn, out in the Buffalo area, who ran for Senate and lost. You know, there's a wide number of where we've had some really talented people. George Amador in the Capital Region. If these people had never left, we'd have all those seats, and that's some of the things that we constantly battle as well.
And there's not a lot of reason to stay if you're going to be in minority hell. Is that right?
Well, people view it that way. You know, there's been people that have served for a long time, like Jim Tedisco, who has had a tremendous impact as a minority member in the assembly. But you do have to find your niche. But certainly, the thing you can't get caught up in is worrying about whether you're in power or not. You have to look on what can I do for my constituents and what impact can I have in public policy. Keep swinging the bat and you'll make some differences. And I say Jim Tedisco is a great example of that, because he's been in the Capital Region for, 30 years, and he's had statewide laws passed. He was a leader of our conference. He was one of the first people to talk about property tax cap and whole sorts of things that the Assembly Republicans never get credit for. But that's just the nature of the beast. And even when Governor Cuomo, in his first 2 years, championed all these fiscal good public policies that we adopted, every single one of them on the fiscal side was an Assembly Republican idea. And we didn't get credit for it because we weren't in the majority. But that's what you sometimes have to take comfort in is, hey, we are making a difference. It's just that, our names aren't up in lights, over the state capitol.
We're out of time. Our guest has been Republican Assembly Minority Leader Brian Kolb. Hey, Brian, it's just great of you to show up and to be with us. Thanks so much for joining us.
Always a pleasure.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gastina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org, and NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decision to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.